Hello, and welcome to our Level Up podcast on ndtnow.com. Think of this podcast like a virtual mentoring session with some of the top level threes in the world. And just to be clear, this podcast and any information provided herein is not intended to be formal training. For more information on becoming a level three or the certification process, please visit asnt.org. In this episode of Level Up, we are talking with Antoinette Bailey, owner of TB3 NDT Consulting. Antoinette Bailey, or better known as Tony to the industry, hails from Long Island, New York, and she is an ASNT NDT Level 3 in the methods of RT, ET, UT, PT, and MT, and holds the ASNT IRRSP certification. She is also certified in the same methods per NAS 410, including an aerospace certification in nitrile etch chemical processes. Tony Bailey was an associate instructor for both Hellier NDT and for ASNT. Her recent work is in NDT training classes, auditing, qualifying, and certifying NDT personnel, developing techniques and obtaining aerospace prime approvals for the aviation, aerospace, and Department of Defense industries. Tony is a U.S. Air Force Gulf War veteran with service between 1990 and 1997. She performed NDT inspections on various military, commercial, and corporate jet aircraft. During her service, she was deployed with her squadron's F-15 aircraft to Saudi Arabia and fought in the Gulf War during the Desert Shield and Desert Storm military campaigns, and was awarded many medals for her service as a Gulf War veteran. Tony, thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, Mary Beth, and thank you for everything you're doing for the NDT industry.
Oh, that's very kind. I guess as someone who dedicated so much of your life to serving, it should be no surprise that you continue to serve the NDT industry by giving back. And we are really thankful to have you here today to share your knowledge and experience with us.
I really appreciate that. You know, I have watched you over the years and known you for many years, and I am honored to emulate all the things that you do. Thank you for your leadership.
Well, as we get into it today, you know, I think it's worth us starting our conversation a little bit talking about the NDT industry and integrity. So we know that NDT is really worthless unless it goes hand in hand with integrity. Tony and I are going to embark on a two-part series that dives into the reality of what level threes are, their authority, and what NDTers may be asked to do, and how sometimes what seems like a gray area is really black and white, and sort of how to determine that. We'll go over some ways to handle these situations. Please note that all stories described herein are hypothetical and do not necessarily depict real life situations. In part one of this series, we are going to cover understanding requirements, responsibilities, and authority when becoming the designated company or responsible level three. So, Tony, why don't we just start with how does someone even become a level three? And maybe you could cover what the differences are between NAS 410 level three requirements and, say, ASNT TC1A.
You know, Mary Beth, I'm so glad that you asked that question, because that is a question that is posed to me at least once a week. How does one become a level three? Well, you may know that I also teach the ASNT basic level three course through ASNT. And one of the things I always say to people is, first of all, you have to be qualified before you become certified. So to be qualified to become a level three, one must first become a level two, obtain the applicable classroom training in the method. Say, for instance, perhaps ultrasonics. Level one classroom training, 40 hours. Level two classroom training, 40 hours. And for SNT TC1A, 1,600 hours in that one method. if that's the only method you're going for. Once they attain their experience, then they have to certify for level two by taking a general, specific, practical exam and vision exam. All of those things makes a level two. And you'd probably be surprised that a lot of people don't know that. Some people think you can just go to college, maybe obtain a degree, which is wonderful, work at a company in R&D, and suddenly you can test for level three. No, you must do all of those things, classroom training, experience, take level two certification exams, and remain in that position for both NAS 410 and S&T C1A. If you have a four-year degree in science or engineering, then you only need to remain a level two for 1 year. And that is what AS&T means when they say you're holding a position comparable to level two. It means you were certified as a level two for at least 1 year. Same thing with NAS 410. And then if you went to college, if you attended college in science or engineering industry, or that's what you studied, you don't have to have a two-year degree. But if you have evidence of 2 years of college, then you only have to remain a level two for 2 years prior to becoming a level three. And then if you have no college, and you don't even have to, graduate high school, you can have a GED. But in any case, you have to at least be a level two for 4 years. So level two, 4 years without any college. Maybe a person may even have a GED. 2 years science or engineering study at a college or university, 2 years as a level two. Or, you know, for those who are pursuing this and they have a four-year degree in science or engineering, 1 year is a level two. Now, for NAS 410, you do not have to be an AS&T level three. You can become a company level three, which means your company would hire an outside agency. The outside agency would vet those records of what I just said. And they would say, yes, you are eligible to test for level three. They would develop a general exam, at least 40 questions in the method, plus questions in other methods. That's your general exam. So it might be a 40 to 60 question test, depending on your examiner. And also your specific exam is on your company procedure and your customer specifications. Then you have to write a procedure, and that's where everyone struggles. Every time I'm testing a level three, they always struggle with how to develop a procedure. And that procedure is graded. And also, if they're accepting product, they have to take a hands-on practical. So that's for NAS 410. Now, the thing is, that certification remains with the company. So if you leave the company, you are no longer a level three for the company. Now, for S&T C1A, you can also choose the employer-based certification program by taking an in-house basic exam. Usually that's developed by a level three outside agency. A basic exam, which is knowledge of at least S&T C1A, materials and processes and other methods. A method exam, say for instance, ultrasonics. And then S&T C1A also says you have to take a specific exam. So you have to take a specific exam for the code that you're working to, say for instance, ASME or AWS or API, whatever your codes are. Now, one last thing, S&T C1A does not say you have to write a procedure that's graded, but you at least have to show evidence that you have written a work instruction or a procedure in the past. And S&T C1A also does not say you have to take a hands-on practical if you are a level three. So therefore, the primary difference would be procedure development and taking a practical for NAS 410.
That's great. I didn't realize that NAS 410 had those additional requirements. They sound like really, really good ones, actually, that probably should be incorporated.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So I guess that leads me to my next question. Can you sort of describe the difference, and you went into a little bit, but the difference between a company level three, an AS&T level three, And then what's known as a quote unquote responsible level three, because I think that causes some confusion, because shouldn't they all be responsible? but maybe you could talk about the differences between those a little bit.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, there are some people, unfortunately, who are not responsible, maybe because no one ever explained to them the responsibilities, right?
Mm, yep.
So that's something I'm trying to change. But let's start with the AS&T level three. So, you know, both NAS 410 and AS&T S&T TC1A, they both say the employer, through the written practice, and the written practice, they can accept an outside agency examination like the AS&T exam. So the AS&T examination for NAS 410, if you take the AS&T basic and the AS&T method, that exam, that certification replaces your general exam. But for S&TC1A, that AS&T certification, the basic and the method, replaces the S&TC1A requirement of the basic and the method. Mm-hmm. And I use that word requirement kind of loosely because, believe it or not, it's a should instead of a shall. Mm-hmm. You would think, right? Interesting. Even though in paragraph, and by the way, I have the whole S&TC1A memorized.
And then, yeah, of course you do.
I do. So paragraph 1.4 has like four shalls, and it says the employer shall make sure candidates attend classroom training, you know, get experience, take exams, be certified and recertified. So therefore, you know, you should slash shall take a basic and a method. So the AS&T certification replaces that for S&TC1A and NAS 410. Now, once you take all of those exams, you know, you can be a company level three or the responsible level three. So for the company level three, let's say you already have let's say the responsible level three. Every company has to have a level three of record. I will say to you that 80% of the people listening here on this podcast, they may not know that. The company has to designate one level three to be responsible for the qualification and certification program. That person is responsible for the written practice, you know, making sure that people achieve all those shalls, you know, training, experience, and exams. And a cert record. That's your job. You're making sure that those people are properly certified. You keep their records. You keep all of the company procedures and techniques secure. You're almost like a quality manager, Mary Beth. Mm. You know? Now, a lot of people who want to be the company level three do not know that. Suddenly, you need to learn about not only quality, but also human resources, so that you don't do anything that violates company policy. I personally think all responsible level threes need some sort of human resources and ethics training before they become a responsible level three. That's what I think, because some people are disappointed when they get there. Now, if you work in a large company and you have multiple methods, let's say your company has six methods that responsible level three is responsible for, that's too much responsibility for one person. So oftentimes they would certify another person to be a method level three. So let's say I am the responsible level three for company, for TB3, for instance. I may have a person responsible for radiography. So that person is responsible to write the radiography method procedure, NDT radiography technique sheets, work instructions, you know, making sure that the radiographers are performing the method correctly. And I may have another person doing the same thing for ultrasonics and eddy current, liquid penetrant matte particle. I have one customer here on Long Island. They have eight level threes because they have around 75 NDT personnel in their company. That responsible level three is busy. He's handling audits and the written practice and all those records. He's constantly busy. So he has at least one other level three handling each method, and he just manages those level threes.
That's really interesting. And I think that's a really good way of breaking it up. I think that there's a lot of responsible level threes out there that have way too much on their plate. And you mentioned the HR training and ethics. I think that is, it's really critical to what they're doing, because essentially they're responsible for these personnel certifications that, yes, that do fall under HR. And that I think is huge. I know that with NDTMA, one of the things that we really try to cover a lot are some of these HR issues, some of these ethics issues, other things that help you thrive as a business owner or a level three in the industry. And it's for that reason, for sure.
Yes, because sometimes they accidentally get themselves into a situation. Like, I have a customer that was, he's the person, just an amazing hands-on level three. But when it comes to record keeping and documentation, he was just terrible. I used to call him Inspector Gadget, or, he's great with the hands-on, but he retired. We couldn't find people's certifications, couldn't find their exams. Could you imagine? You go through the trouble of taking an exam and the level three lost it.
Oh, man.
Or he lost your OJT records. What he had a habit of doing was taking it home, because, he was like, well, I could concentrate better at home. You're not supposed to do that, you see? So, yeah. So, yeah. Therefore, also administrative training is probably needed too. How to be a good administrator.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important. I mean, of course, working in NDT, everything has to do with keeping records, right? If you don't keep records, it's basically like the test or anything else just didn't exist. So I think probably everybody should get in NDT should get that sort of training as well.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you, it does sound like that's a pretty heavy load. And so does a responsible level three need to be a full-time employee of a company?
I just love it when our conversations flow together. Absolutely. therefore, the responsible level three doesn't need to be a full-time employee. The responsible level three can be an outside agency, and that could be a person or a company that's hired, and that they're hired by contract. So the company and the outside agency will make an agreement as to the role. The thing is that outside agency responsible level three needs to know you're just as responsible as if you worked full time for that company. So you cannot be derelict in your duties. Here's my take on it. If it's a small company, let's say you have, 5 to 8 level ones and level twos at that company, then an outside agency could be utilized. This is my opinion. Because as an outside agency, you can handle something like that. If you have a very good responsible, let's say you have a very good, diligent level two, that's kind of a leader, like a supervisory role, you designate that person to be in that role, and you can go to visit them at least once a month or once every quarter. I have some FAA repair stations that I'm responsible level three, four, and they're so talented. They're like level 2.5. You know what I mean? And they're small companies. So I am their outside agency responsible level three, because I trust them to do the right thing. But I make sure that we do good audits, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Trust but verify.
Trust but verify. Technical performance reviews and audits. Now, but if it's a large organization, it's in the best interest to have a full-time responsible level three. And there's some companies that have asked me to take them on. And I say no, because you have too many level ones and level twos that need supervision. And before I even take on something like that as an outside agency, I come in and do a gap analysis audit. I say, let me do an intro audit to determine what would be my responsibilities. And many times I say, no, I'm not taking you on. How about you bring me on as an advisor to take one of your best people and turn that person into your full-time responsible level three? And I will tell you, lately, I have to almost twist the company's arm to agree to that. Jesus. So, yeah, what I've been saying to them is like, listen, I'm getting older. You know what I mean? Here's my expression. I say, you know what? That's like I have my own house with children. And let's say I have two houses down the road or in another city or state. I can't be responsible for all of those houses. I would be an irresponsible parent. Mm-hmm. That's the same way I see it as level three. You know, if you have a large house with lots of children in that home, they need full-time parenting rather than part-time, every now and then parenting. So usually if a company is more than 8 to 12 level ones, level twos, and no in-house level three, that responsible, they need a full-time person. There you go.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And so just sort of as a review, the responsible level three, or any level three for the company, is responsible for the written practices, the personnel certification, the personnel qualification, correct?
That would be the numero uno responsible level three.
Okay.
That's responsible for that. But he can delegate method level threes. Those level threes are really responsible for work instructions, developing those and approving them, and also making sure the personnel are following them. Mm. And also, you know, a lot of people don't know that you have to have a full method procedure. That's usually developed or maybe taken care of by your method level three. Like, for instance, there's a huge aerospace company that I was just responsible for. So I had a person designated for each method. So all I had to do was follow up with them and say, all right, let's do an audit. Let's make sure that we're okay in radiography, ultrasonics, eddy current, you know, magnetic particle. Let me do an audit. Make sure they are doing their jobs to take care of the method for me while I focus on the written practice, qualification, certification, and record keeping and auditing.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you then, what if you have you're working at a company full time and you are asked to become a company level three, or even if you're an outside agency and you're asked to become company level three or the responsible level three, and you realize that there's no written practice in place and that everything was reliant on, you know, tribal knowledge, institutional knowledge. How should somebody handle that? Because this is not an isolated incident. You know, right. I've worked for companies, you've worked for companies, everybody's worked for companies where this is how things were done for a really long time. It was just, oh yeah, that guy showed me how to do it, so that's how I know how to do it. Yes. that's really... unfortunately not isolated. So how would you tell somebody to handle that?
You know what, that happens a lot. For instance, here's an example. About 2 years ago, right when COVID hit, there was an aerospace company, unfortunately, that was in that situation. They said, well, we follow NAS 410, and you know, the aircraft maintenance manual tells us how to do the inspections. And I said, you do not say, here is the NAS 410 actual document. This is my written practice. That is not correct. That happens a lot with it happens really often with SNTC-1A. Mm-hmm. They will actually show you the actual SNTC-1A document. And I said, listen, is your company name on this document you purchased? No, it does not belong to you. And then I show them in the paragraph where it says, matter of fact, section 5 of SNTC-1A says the company shall designate one person to be the responsible level three, and they shall have a written practice, and the written practice has to be available for auditing. It says that. A lot of people don't know there's like 8 or 9 shalls in SMTC1A. Someone said to me once, when they say shall, do they mean shall? I said, honey, shall means shall.
Oh my God, that's right. Look up the word shall, right?
No deviation there. So, and then with NAS 410, section 4.0, it says the company shall have a written practice. So those are the shalls. But sometimes you're right. You get promoted to level 3. Because let's say you're a level 2 working for the company and you're excited to become a level 3. And then the company says, you are our responsible level 3. And you say, oh, great. And then you find out there's no written practice. So that is why level 3s need to go to training, for instance, like the AS&T basic course, so they can learn how to write their own procedure, their own written practice. Yeah. How to write a qualification certification procedure. So that means you will have to write it yourself. Can you imagine that? And if you don't have anybody to teach you how to write it, my goodness. So some people just go word line by line. They'll take the SMTC1A and say, all right, 1.1, where it says the company shall, we say TB3 shall, right? And use the same words. That's one way to start. You know, and then you have to kind of massage it to make it your own.
So I guess once you become, say, a company level 3, and then they ask you to be a responsible level 3, would the best thing to do at that point be to do an internal audit?
Oh my goodness. You know what? You could be a level 3, Mary Betty. Now see, I didn't even have to say that. What I tell people is, when someone asks you, will you be the responsible level 3, you should respond, I'll get back to you. Get some advice from a mentor. And then you're right. You have to audit the process. So AS&T actually publishes recommended audit checklists. They actually publish those. So a person could purchase audit checklists from AS&T. And that helps them. Matter of fact, and I'm not promoting AS&T necessarily. I don't want people to know that that is one resource, but there are a few resources where you can purchase audit checklists or even take auditing classes. That's right. So therefore, when someone asks me, Tony, will you be the responsible level 3? The first thing I do is audit the process and see, do they have a written practice? Do they have method procedures? Do they have technique sheets and work instructions? Because if they don't, that means as a level 3, you have to find a way to get it created. And what if you're not certified in the method? Well, that means you need to hire another level 3 certified in the method. Because for instance, with me, I never documented my hours for VT. Even though I have a lot of OJT and visual training, I never documented it. I never took the classroom training. So I am not eligible to be a VT3 at the moment. So I wouldn't go around pretending to be a VT3 or take an exam for that. I would hire another level 3 who is legit certified. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I hate to say this, a lot of people just don't want to spend the money. They're either being lazy or they don't want to spend the money. And that's unfortunate. And I shouldn't say people, it's the corporations.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of managers for sure.
A lot of managers. So therefore, you know, the thing is, a lot of people these days are still reliant on tribal knowledge. And that is really something that's frowned upon in every industry. And, you know, even the codes tell you, they say, well, first of all, you have to have a written practice that meets either, you know, SMTC1A, CP189, NAS 410. And also, you have to have method procedures. You can't say that you're using the code or ASTM, you know? And I don't know if I told you this, but a couple of years ago, an article was written about us, about TB3, where we helped the Department of Defense to understand this. They didn't know. They said, well, we're meeting NAS 410 and we're following ASTM. And I said, no, you're not.
So we did a huge class for the Joint Munitions Command, and they published this. I said, here is where it says you have to make your own written practice. And here's an example of one. So I ended up helping them to develop it. And then I said, you also cannot say you're just following ASTM 1742, you know, which is for film radiography, when you're doing digital. And cool. Digital can be 2033 for CR or 2698 for DDA. So you can't say you're using a film ASTM, right? You know, so I said, you need your own procedure. So I ended up teaching them how to read and interpret the ASTMs and make their own procedures. Well, really what I ended up doing was writing it for them. And I said, okay, I wrote this for you. Now let's massage it and make it into your own. Mm-hmm. So I spent about the last 4 years training those guys on how to develop and make their own work instructions. And I feel like a proud mama, because now they're flying high. They're doing so great. So yeah, I'll send you the article on that.
Yeah, that's really great. That's a great story, you know, because really NDT in general, you know, everybody likes to share their knowledge and it's very collaborative. And so it's really great to have that kind of story where you're sharing your knowledge and it's making a whole industry better.
Absolutely. I remember the first time I had to write a procedure. I had someone recently that was struggling and I said, don't give up. I said, I remember when I first started on this journey and my responsible level 3 said to me, Tony, you know, I'm taking you to NAS 410 level 3 because I had achieved my AS&T mag particle impenetrant. He said, okay, now you need to take the specific exam and you have to write a procedure. And of course I was accustomed to taking practicals, but I didn't know how to write a procedure. So he said, let's start off with a work instruction. So a work instruction is a part specific how to, it's like a miniature procedure. And I mean, even though I use these all the time for inspecting aircraft, I sat in front of the computer, didn't know where to begin. I didn't know where to begin. So eventually I said, you know what? I know that I have to have a reference. I have to have a scope. I have to have a reference. I have to mention qualification, certification. Who can inspect these parts? And then I said, I know the process. Clean the part, put the penetrant on, look at the part, and accept reject. No cracks. That right there is a procedure. All I had to do was add details. And before you know it, ta-da, I had written my first work instruction. Isn't that great?
That is great. I often liken writing a procedure to that trust exercise where one person's blindfolded and they have to give instructions to that person about how another person has to give instructions to the blindfolded person about how to get through an obstacle course. And it's very difficult to do. You think that you're explaining things well, but then knowing that you're trying to do it for somebody who's blindfolded, I think is how you can really think about it when you're writing a procedure, because that person is blindfolded. They don't know what they're doing yet. And so you need to really be very specific about how to get through that process.
What you just described reminds me of tribal knowledge. Mm-hmm. Because by the time a tribal knowledge gets to like a third or a fourth person, it was nothing like what the first person said.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And
that's why it has to be written down.
That's right. That's right. So overall, how do you handle? Well, first of all, people have to really know the requirement that you have to have a written practice. You have to have method procedures and you have to have work instructions. And many people that go for level 3, some people say, well, I'm just doing it for myself, for a self-achievement. And I say, well, that's wonderful. But, you're not always going to have a research and development job. So you really have to learn the skills for being a level 3. So that means just technical writing, you know?
Yeah. And even if you are doing it just for your achievement, you would should want to do it correctly.
That's right.
That's more, right. More of an achievement that way.
That's right. Well, I have one more thing to say about that. And the thing is, I say to people, when people say, I want to be a level three, my question to them is, why? What is your why? And do you know what a level three does? What does that mean? It does not mean that you're a more awesome NDT tech or you're more talented than the next person. That you can perform ultrasonics or radiography or penetrant better than the next person. That does not mean that it's the case. Because a lot of times, you know, managers will say, oh, you're going to reject those parts? Well, let's get the level three to look at it. No. The level three hasn't been working on the floor for 2 or 3 years. How are they going to be better than the person that's looking at those parts every day?
Right.
So a level three override is not the final word. What do level threes do? We quality assurance, auditing, record keeping, procedure development, work instructions, but mostly records and compliance. You have to know how to read specifications and drawings and things like that. So that's what we do. And I always say to someone, if you're doing it for selfish reasons, you know, if you're just going to keep it all to yourself, I don't know. Maybe you should question your motive. I mean, you know, because someone had to help you get to where you were. Who helped you become a level one, level two? You're level three. So maybe you shouldn't keep all that knowledge to yourself. So that's what I tell them.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Well, I am really looking forward to part two of this podcast, which we're going to do later in the summer, because that one's really going to be about what happens when things go wrong. And that's always the fun part for me to hear about, not actually witness, but I like to hear about the, you know, because I used to work in failure analysis. So I like to hear about it afterwards and figure out how things could have been corrected. So I think that's going to be really interesting for our listeners to hear about different scenarios of, well, what happens when something goes wrong, or what happens when you have to revoke somebody's certification, or where you have to stop production or something like that. So I am looking forward to part two for sure, about being the responsible level three and what that means in a real life setting. Because I think there is a little bit of a misunderstanding as to, you know, I think some people are like, oh, I want the glory of being the responsible level three. And they don't understand what the other half of that is.
Oh, yes. You said it all. And, you know, I'm excited for that too, because there was a scenario that happened even a month ago. You think that you've seen it all? Well, just a month ago, I had to be the bad guy. So I, you know, can't wait to talk to you about that. It's not easy to be the one to say, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to stop the process. And everybody's going to be mad at you, but you have to still stand up for what's right.
Right. And that's where that integrity comes in. And I'm looking forward to exploring that more with you. So thank you again for joining us today, Tony. It was, I learned some additional information that I didn't know, even after being in the industry for almost 30 years now. So I know our listeners learned a lot today. So thank you for sharing your knowledge with all of us.
Oh, I thank you for having me. And I'm excited to be on this journey with you to make things better in NDT.
Excellent. And thank you all again for listening. Remember to listen to Level Up and all of our podcasts at ndtnow.com.